Chris, and I'm the vicar here if you haven't worked that out. And if you are new and you're visiting us, please do feel, you know, say hello, stay for coffee at the end if you're able to. We would love to get to know you. I want to focus our thoughts today as we think about remembrance, particularly on something that happened locally in this community 100 years ago, the sinking of HMS Hythe. And there are four reasons why I wanted to do that, particularly today. Firstly, because it's timely. It was only 100 years ago last week that the Hythe was actually sunk. And last Saturday, we actually celebrated a service in St. Matthew's to remember that those that lost their lives on it, and to give thanks on that 100th anniversary. The next reason is that it's local. It is probably the thing in the last two world wars that had the biggest impact on this community and kind of the surrounding area. Probably the greatest loss this community has ever seen in any conflict. But there's more to it than that, because it seems to me that that one disaster, and it was huge, actually typifies so many of the uncomfortable questions that we have about war, and in particular about the Great War. And kind of, it raises those questions. It doesn't give us any answers, but it kind of, it brings so many challenges. And they aren't just challenges of history. The fourth reason why I want to talk about it is it seems to me that actually it continues to present a challenge to us in our generation too. So I'm just going to kind of work my way through those four things. It is timely. The 28th of October marked the 100th anniversary of the sinking of HMS Hythe. And just 2 weeks ago we had the Mayor of Southborough, Tunbridge Wells, our local MP, and 150 people whose lives, one way or another, have been impacted by that. They had lost relatives in that disaster, gathering here to remember. The actual memorial to the Hythe has only been in St. Matthew's a relatively short time. It came here in 1961. But it kind of represents a huge loss in our community. What amazes me is how that actually somehow remembering seems to increase in significance as the years go on rather than decrease. And the Hythe typifies that. At the 90th anniversary, there were maybe 60, 70 people. This year, there were 150. It feels somehow all the more important to remember and to give thanks for those that gave their lives. And it doesn't seem to be just something, you know, that service was dominated by people that were older, that had memories of, you know, people speaking of those that had lost their lives, even if they didn't know them personally. Their uncles had predominantly were the people that had lost their lives that they'd come to remember. But actually, it's something that seems to touch younger generations. It was great to have the school in here the week after, spending time thinking about remembering. At the end of our service today, there's going to be some cakes that have been made by some of the children in our church family being sold for the British Legion. And it's good that actually every generation is increasingly thinking about why it's important to remember and to give thanks. And it may be that whole thing about it being a 100th anniversary that brings it to mind. But I suspect it's because of the times in which we live. You know, sadly, there have been too many poignant reminders of the cost of serving our nation for people in this generation. We've lost too many in recent years. It's not just something in history, it's something that's touched our generation too. And that makes us think of those that gave their lives in those great wars. So it is timely. It's also local. Because I work in the church, I see that memorial every day. And actually, it's hard not to think about it. Not necessarily daily, but it's not far from one's thoughts. What's interesting is the number of people that come to see it because they lost someone in that disaster. And often they're people from this community or that's roots are in this community, and they've come back here. It's hard to comprehend that such a small area of Kent, Southborough, High Brooms, Silverdale, Rusthall, Tunbridge Wells, Tunbridge, that's where these men came from, lost so many people in one disaster. And the men that are commemorated on that memorial were all part of three company of Fortress Kent of the Royal Engineers. It was a company of engineers raised by David Solomon Sr., who was the honorary colonel of the regiment. It was led in part by his son, kind of David, but known as Reggie, who was a captain and who lost his life with his men. More of that in a moment. Those Fortress Engineers were originally raised to defend Kent. They thought they were going to spend their time on the Kent coast. And they were local tradesmen, blacksmiths, leather workers, people that kind of worked in the communities around here. And they were going to use their skills for their nation to make a difference. But on the night of the 28th of October, they were only 40 minutes from the end of a 16-day journey. They'd been sent abroad rather than serving here, and they were going to the conflict in Gallipoli. And they were due to embark at Cape Hells. The officers and the men were ready on deck to disembark and when the ship was struck by the Sarnia. And what follows is filled with confusion, it's filled with courage, and it's filled with tragedy. The Hive was only a small coaster. It wasn't really intended for being where it was and doing what it was doing. It had been a cross channel ferry at one time. It worked generally as a coaster. And its work in that First World War was to ferry troops between Lemnos and Cape Hells. It was a relatively short journey. But because it was small, the men had to stand on deck. And they packed them in so they couldn't even sit down. It was overcrowded. There was a tarpaulin over them to protect them from the elements. It must have been an uncomfortable journey. And it must have been a journey filled with anticipation, not knowing what they were going to find when they disembarked onto the beaches at Cape Hells. As they were approaching that destination, in the final minutes of their journey, the Sarnia was coming out of Cape Hells. It had disembarked men before them. Neither ship had lights on. They saw each other too late. Apparently, I ought to know because I've got a grandfather that was in the Navy, but I don't really understand all these. Apparently, if you have two ships approaching, they should both steer in the same direction, which means they should steer away from each other. Does that make sense? But only the Hive steered and the Sarnia didn't. And that meant that the Sarnia struck the Hive in the bow just by the foremast. It punched a hole in the side of the ship and it brought the mast down and the mast came down onto the tarpaulin. And the men were effectively trapped under the tarpaulin that was meant to be kind of their covering. As the boats separated, the water gushed into the hole in the Hive, and in 10 minutes, the Hive sunk. Some of the men managed to jump to the Sarnia before it moved away. Some managed to be pulled from the water, but in all, 154 men lost their lives, most of which came from the Royal Engineers. There were 15 other soldiers. There were 11 seamen. The loss of life included David Solomon. He could have got away, but he chose to stay on the ship and stay with his men. It's a local disaster. It's probably the biggest disaster this community has ever seen. And kind of 100 years away from it, it's hard to comprehend what the impact it would have had on this community would have been. So many young men losing their lives in a few short minutes. The reality of that each one of those represents a personal loss and a personal tragedy. And it all made worse that some of them were brothers, even a father and a son lost their lives together. Many came from the same streets. They'd grown up together, they'd gone to school together, they'd lived their lives together, they'd served together, and now they'd died together. And how one makes sense of the loss, for those that lost loved ones, I don't know. And I guess they probably didn't think about it much in those days, but we're aware of it now. You actually also wonder how the survivors would have fared, how they would have lived their lives with the knowledge that so many others had gone and somehow they hadn't. But actually for many of them, their war wasn't over and they still didn't come home, even though they survived that. So it is timely. It's very much about our local community. But I think it also, it raises some, you know, although it's one thing, it raises some of the very big questions about conflict, about war, about the First World War in particular. We're left with all those horrible questions about how could this happen? We're left with that sense of that terrible waste of life. You know, they had given them, they're willingly signed up to serve, and they hadn't even really got to serve. Their lives had been taken from them before they could even do anything of consequence in the war. It seems to be kind of so without point. And yes, there are logical answers. There was the obligatory kind of inquiry. There were no life jackets. The lifeboats didn't kind of get launched. The canvas and the mast might have seemed a good idea, but actually it was a disaster. There were kind of lots of logical reasons. But those don't answer the deeper, more philosophical questions. The Hive disaster was part of a war that took so many young lives. When we had the school in, we talked a bit about it, and they wanted to ask their questions. And inevitably the question comes out, but why was there a First World War? And, you know, historians still argue about it. Yes, there was an assassination. Yes, there were alliances. It's so hard even to make sense of the point of the war. And as Claire said earlier, it was called a war to end all wars. And actually, it only sowed the seeds of the next world war with the unfairness of the Versailles Treaty. And the campaign that they were a part of, that they were going to serve in, Gallipoli, was ill thought out. You know, so many people lost their lives there. And for what? And all of this, you know, just reminds us of so much loss. The men that lost their lives on the Somme, the men that fought and died throughout Europe as well. It's very hard to make sense of the whys. History tells us that you can trace the decline in the Christian faith, particularly if you measure it by church attendance, with the Great War. Too many people saw things that they would never ever get over. And when they saw those things, they found that there was no place in their thinking for God. How could God allow that to happen? Where is God in that sort of event? The POWs regiments that went forward, in a way the Hive was like one of those, where whole communities lost their loved ones in one charge on a battlefield. There are just so many questions it raises. And it seems to me that those questions are still questions that we struggle with today. That's why I think it challenges our present too. You know, we called it the war to end all wars, and we know that it wasn't. There are other conflicts, there are other wars. We're involved in them to some degree today with ISIS, even though it seems far removed. And so we remember them today. But isn't there also something reminiscent about this terribly overcrowded ship travelling in the night with no lights, being struck by another vessel and sinking before anyone can do anything about it? Yeah, it may not be kind of in war, but it's as the result of conflict that so many people are fleeing Syria, crowding into boats, putting their lives at risk just in the hope of having a life. And again and again we hear of terrible tragedies where boats are sunk, where huge numbers of lives are lost. There are echoes of history in our present. And so the questions remain. The passage we have read talks about laying down one's life for our friends. And we're here today because we remember so many young men that paid the ultimate sacrifice. Not just the hive, but all that gave their life in both world wars and in the conflicts that follows. That gave their lives for their friends, but also for us too. But is it no wonder that so many lost their faith too? That so many struggle with those deep questions, those whys, and ask, where is God in all of this? Whether it's individual pain or suffering, or the combined suffering of so many that we remember today, I think the longer I'm a clergyman, a vicar, the more I become aware there are no easy or trite or simple answers to those questions of pain and suffering. But I do think that passage reveals something of God's heart. There may not be easy answers to the kind of the whys of those individual losses and deaths and events like this. But there are some things that the scripture reveals to us. And one of them is about the nature of God. And Jesus, more than anyone, reveals us what God is like. He shows us a God that doesn't remain distant from his children. He talks about the love that God has for him and he has for us. And that greater love, more than anything, reminds us of the depth of Jesus' love. Because that greater love is his love. He chooses to enter into our humanity. Doesn't stand aloof and watch the disasters unfold, but he steps into it. He shares our humanity. He shares our suffering, our pain, our sorrow, and our grief. When he stands at the tomb of his friend, he weeps for him and he weeps for his sisters. He knows the same loss that we know. He shares our suffering and our pain, and he lays down his life for a broken world. He lays down his life for us. And somehow, where is God? Somehow, in the midst of it, he enters into our humanity and he shares it and he understands and he walks with us in the pain of it. And that brings with it another challenge, because Paul writes that our attitude should be that as Christ, who being in the very nature God, didn't consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. That's the nature of God. Not a God that looks unmoved, but a God that enters in, that shares our suffering and our pain, and comes to serve. Just as so many gave their lives in serving, he comes to serve and gives his life for us. God doesn't stand at a distance. He chooses to enter in. And it's not a simple answer to the whys of people's individual pain and suffering, but it's a sense that God journeys with us in it, and God steps in to make a difference. But there's also within it a challenge, because Paul says that your attitude, my attitude, our attitude should be the same. Jesus doesn't give us room to stand back either from the pain and the suffering that's in our world. We can't go back 100 years to the beaches of Gallipoli and the sea around it. We can't even go to Syria or to ISIS. It's quite hard even to go to the camps on the other side of the channel. But we can make a difference here with those lives that we touch, with the money and the resources that we have that can go to places where we can't. We're called not to stand back, but to enter in, because that's what our God does. Amen.